Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
What I want, you've got, it might be hard to handle.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Once a week, we are going to be talking with our friend, attorney Brad Young, and just talk about what is in the news of a legal nature. Brad, always good to have you. Thanks for being here.
Oh, my pleasure, Dave. Anytime.
So let's start with the soda gun. This one's interesting.
Yeah, this is a great story, and it's great because it's funny, but it also highlights some important legal and constitutional issues. Now, this will be a shock to no one. This comes out from the Ozarks in southern Missouri, and a middle school kid builds a replica of an AK-47 out of Dr. Pepper cans. Mm. Now, it's not functional. Mm. You can't shoot it, but he just built it, and honestly, it looks a whole lot like an AK-47. So he posted online, and all of a sudden, the next day, kid shows up at school. The school says, well, we've got to, you know, search you, and you're under double secret probation, as they said, in Animal House. And then finally, they suspended him from school because he posted it. And, you know, we can laugh about it, but the issue is, can schools punish kids for pictures or speech or art that they do outside of class? Mm-hmm. They don't bring it onto campus. They do it in the comfort of their own home, and yet they're being punished for it. Can schools do that? And so the parents of this middle schooler filed a lawsuit last week in southern Missouri, and we're going to see this play out in court.
So what do you think? What are the chances?
Well, I'm relatively certain that the parents are going to prevail here. And here's the reason why. The Supreme Court dealt with almost this exact same issue about 4 years ago, where a cheerleader posted some, shall I say, unsavory comments about a teacher. And then on her social, not even on social media, it was just sent around via Snapchat. And somehow it got passed on to the school. The student was suspended, and they filed suit. The Supreme Court said, look, there's two things going on here. First of all, schools have a very, very limited ability to influence or to direct or punish students for speech outside of class. And then secondly, it's a question of whether there's any direct threat against anybody at school. Now, the last time I checked, a Dr. Pepper AK-47 isn't going to hurt anybody. And so I'm really sure that, number one, this case will probably get settled. And number two, if it doesn't get settled, the parents are going to win this one.
So, Brad, if you were the attorney for the school district and they said, we think it's okay, but in an abundance of caution, we want to call the cops and have them do a home visit, would you advise them, not don't even do that, or do you think that's appropriate?
No, if I were advising the school district, I would absolutely take that action because that serves two functions. Number one, it shows that the schools can't specifically direct everything that kids say outside of school. But then secondly, it shows that you're taking into consideration the safety of the kids at school so that the student doesn't come to school. That would be the absolute most appropriate thing to do. But the problem here, Dave, is that students have, and these things drive me crazy, when schools have what they call zero tolerance policies.
Right.
Okay, zero tolerance policies is a fancy way of saying we are idiots. Okay, mm-hmm. Because anybody can look at a Dr. Pepper AK-47 and say, that's not going to hurt anybody. But if you have a zero tolerance policy, I mean, this is the same kind of logic that led a couple of years ago to some kid in grade school who took his peanut butter and jelly sandwich and bit it in the shape of a pistol and pointed it at his buddy, and he got suspended. Mm-hmm. Now, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches don't kill anybody unless you need the Heimlich or you're allergic to peanuts. So it's those zero tolerance policies that are the problem here.
So I don't know the answer to this question, so this is just a big loaded question. Do kids have the same freedom of speech that adults do in a school setting? Because we all grew up in schools where we were told we can't say certain things, we can't express mm-hmm. certain things. We can't in some places, even public schools, have to have a dress code. Like, do they get the same protections that the rest of us do?
And that's a great question, Wheels. And here's the answer. We know what the answer is. The answer is that outside of school, kids have the same First Amendment free speech protections as anyone else. Outside or inside school, the question then becomes, and this was decided way back in 1968 in Tinker versus Des Moines, where kids were coming to school with black armbands protesting the Vietnam War. And the Supreme Court said in the 60s that kids even have freedom of speech at school, but the question is, does it disrupt the school setting by you exercising your free speech? If yes, you don't get to say it at school. If no, then you get to say it at school. So, for example, we had a whole bunch of kids who would wear pro-Trump t-shirts to school back in 2016 and 2017, and they were kicked out of school for wearing pro-Trump shirts. The courts ruled, and I don't think any of these actually got very far in the courts, but that was an easy call because they were exercising their free speech to wear mm-hmm. a shirt that was pro-Trump. But if you come to school and say, well, you know, my religion is I'm a Native American and I have to smoke peyote during school hours, they're going to send you home for that. So, you know, when I was a drummer in high school, I didn't think about telling my friends, hey, say you're a Native American and maybe you can get away with smoking weed at school. I didn't think about doing that. But if you do that today, you're still going to get kicked out because that would be deemed to be disruptive.
Dave, have you seen the pictures of the Dr. Pepper quote unquote gun?
No, I haven't.
It's literally just 8 Dr. Pepper cans kind of arranged in the shape of a gun.
So it's not.
It is ridiculous. I find this so beyond ridiculous. And by the way, are guns just considered to be evil by
just
everyone?
Prima facie evil.
Yeah, just like, oh, you referenced a gun. That's bad. That's so weird to me that they would take
it. Yeah, it is weird. And it reflects, obviously, our culture today. I mean, when I was a kid, and I know things have changed, but a lot of times I would go goose hunting before school. And I would keep a shotgun in the back of my El Camino. That really dates me. But I would have a shotgun in my El Camino when I came back in from goose hunting. Well, if you did that today, I mean, you're going to the slammer. So I understand that things have changed over time. But when you get to the point where a crudely made Dr. Pepper AK-47 lands you a 2-day suspension, that's just absurd.
And people who are in arrears on their student loans better look out. They're back in business.
They are back in business. The number I saw today was $1.7 trillion right now in defaulted and unpaid student loans.
Wow.
$1.7 trillion with a T. And so none of these have been collected on since the year 2000, since the beginning of COVID. And now the government is saying, you know, look, we've floated this bill for long enough. All of the attempts at waiving and eliminating student debt have disappeared. And so now it's time to start the repayment process. And it will be enforced.
I've heard it's our biggest asset, the country, is the student loan money.
Well, it depends on what you say an asset. I mean, treasury bills are technically assets. And there's trillions of dollars in T-bills that are floating out there. But it is an enormous asset. But in reality, it's kind of a questionable asset because we have $1.7 trillion right now in these loans. But how many of those are going to be defaulted on?
Yeah.
They're going to go unpaid. You know, a lot of those, I bet, are uncollectible. And so the question isn't the total amount. The question is, you know, how much do you actually collect?
Talking to attorney Brad Young here, Harvard is suing Donald Trump. What over?
Well, Harvard's suing Trump because Trump has announced that there's two things, really. One is Trump is saying we're going to challenge your 501c3 status, which would make it non-tax deductible for millionaires and billionaires to write big checks to Harvard. But then secondly, they're saying unless you clean up your program, meaning the Trump administration has defined clean up as being you have to eliminate all DEI programs and you have to submit your curriculum to the Department of Education for approval before we'll give you any money. And right now, the last number I saw was annually, Harvard gets about $7 billion every year from the federal government in student loans and research grants and all kinds of money. And so Harvard's suing them, saying this is a First Amendment issue, that you're trying to control how Harvard speaks, control the speech that's given, and you're trying to control the speech of the professors and the teachers. And this is coming directly from the government, and it violates the First Amendment.
And what do you think of the chances on that one?
Well, first of all, there is no right to receive grants from the federal government. So that's the first hurdle I think that Harvard is going to have to overcome. They don't have a right. It's not an entitlement, right? The government just chooses to give it to them. But secondly, if the government says we're going to make the giving of these grants contingent upon you following even curriculum guidelines, I think that really skates up right up to the edge of a First Amendment violation. And I would think that there, even if this goes to trial or goes up on appeal, the court would try to navigate something in between because clearly the government doesn't have to give the money, but they can't make a contingent on you speaking the way the government wants you to speak.
So finally, there is a case involving LGBTQ textbooks in schools or books in schools.
Exactly. And what's happened, this comes out of Maryland, and this case was argued in front of the Supreme Court this week. And what happened was, is that parents objected to this school in Maryland when the county approved books featuring LGBTQ plus characters for inclusion in all of their language arts curriculum. This wasn't a special class. This was required reading for English classes and other types of language arts classes for children between the ages of 3 and 10. And so some parents objected. They were Muslim parents, Roman Catholic, Ukrainian Orthodox, Roman Catholic, and they objected, filed suit and said, our kids get to get out of that. And it was argued in front of the Supreme Court this week. And at least six, if not seven, of the justices of the Supreme Court expressed an enormous degree of skepticism about whether the school could force parents to allow their kids to sit through this curriculum without any say or objection.
What do you guys think of that? How's that hit you?
I don't know why we would treat gay people any differently than straight people. So I don't look at it and go like, oh, it's bad to be gay, so I get why they want to sit out, and that's just the way I look at it, and I have a hard time understanding the other side.
So for example, if a pair of gay parents said, we want our child to opt out of any straight cisgender
representations. I mean, how is it any different than this?
Right. Equal protection.
How is it any different than a racist deciding I don't want to learn about minorities?
Brad, what about those questions?
Well, at least the lawsuit filed by the parents who were Muslims and Catholics and Ukrainian Orthodox didn't base it on their preferences, but based it on the elements of their religion and of their faith. So you would have to say, well, I belong to a religion that says heterosexuality is invalid and only homosexuality is allowed. If there was a religion that said that, then maybe that would be a plausible argument for the parents. But we don't have that case in front of us. We do have Muslim parents with Islam rejecting homosexuality and Catholic parents with Catholicism, by and large, rejecting homosexuality. And so they're doing on the basis of freedom of religion, not freedom of preference.
Boy, yeah, but I mean, like, I thought that in a public setting, we're not supposed to give preference to those things. Like, send your kid to a private school if you don't want to be exposed to the rest of society.
Well, like so many other times, it seems to come down to the right to practice your religion to someone else's right to free speech.
And right.
We've been
right.
fighting that battle all the way back.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, but the Supreme Court, we do have precedent on this, too. The Supreme Court, about 15 years ago, I think the case was Wisconsin versus Yoder, where the Supreme Court said that Amish parents could take their kids out of school because for them it was against their religion to have their kids in school, so they could remove them from school. And so the opt-out, and this is really what all the justices focused on in this present case, is that the opt-out procedure is so easy. The parents just have to be told that this is happening, and the parents can object, and then the school could just send them to study hall. And so the opt-out procedure being so easy makes it, I think, that probably a 7-2 decision for the Supreme Court, saying that the school can't really say, well, we can't send them to study hall because that's such an easy thing to do. And that's probably the way they're going to rule.
I wonder how religious families who believe in like a new earth deal with science class and evolution. Are you able to opt out of science class in that case? I just wonder if that's ever like made it to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, what about young earthers, Brad?
You know, I got to tell you, Dave, somebody the other day said, Brad, whatever I hear on the radio, you got answers for everything. You know, I don't have an answer for the new earthers out there. But I can say that if the court holds in this case that opting out is such an easy thing for the school to do, you know, if you could just go to study hall, then yeah, if you've got a new earther kind of religion going on here, then the school can just send you to study hall. I think the court's going to say that's an easy fix.
Wow.
It is, but I mean, you're still going to have to pass standardized tests at some point. You're still going to be graded on whether or not you know certain things. I mean, you're going to have to take tests if you're in school. If you're in a science class, you're going to have to take, so do you get different tests? Do you get to determine what's on the test and what's not?
That's a great question. That's why the Supreme Court decided what's called the Lemon Test years and years ago, that says if the school has to get too much involved with determining what is part of a religion and what is not, then they just can't do it. And so if the school here has to get into parceling out what part of the test is religious or might infringe on someone's religious beliefs, the court's going to say the school doesn't have to do that.
That's great. I didn't know that.
Depends on how gay those test questions are. All right, Brad, you're the best. Thank you.
My pleasure, guys.
I don't mind you coming here. Welcome back, DGS 325. So, can we talk about yesterday when I had to leave the show 2 minutes early because I was choking? It was the weirdest thing. So, I broke a lot of rules. You're not supposed to eat at all, and I took a bite of something, and I swallowed that, and then I took a pill, and I don't take pills great. I never have. And the older I get, people know this, things get more difficult, and I have this pill I take every day, and it's not a horse pill, but it's not small. And so we're going back on air, so I try to take it really quickly. And you know how you start to throw a baseball, and you stop, and you stop, and you stop, and then you throw it, and it hits the ground in front of you? That's what I did with the pill.
Oh, no.
And it went sideways.
Ooh.
And so I could breathe.
Right.
But I had a sideways pill stuck in my throat.
Just feeling weird.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't.
Dude, your eyes were watering.
Well, yeah.
Tell the truth, I threw up. I went into C and had to throw up in the wastebasket because it wasn't going up, it wasn't going down.
Gotcha.
It was just...
Yeah, we thought you just had water go down the wrong pipe.
No. It was bad.
Man, uh-oh. That sucks.
Yeah.
Been there, but it still sucks no matter what. Like, it's one of those moments where, like, it's... Because it's so unusual, it is so uncomfortable.
Yeah, you're not used to a sideways pill in your throat.
Right, you're not used to anything being there permanently, right? It's used to being there for a split second and gone.
Last time that happened was when I swallowed those liquid gels when I was alone at home, and it went into the back of my face. Like, it was, like, behind my cheekbone. I'm like, how is that a compartment? I was trying to Heimlich myself on the sink. It was bad. All I could think about was Fred Bottomer was watching me and C throw up in the wastebasket.
100%.
I did not want that for either one.
And I'm sure it didn't faze him at all.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right. On audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX 332. That was a short little break there. Mm-hmm. Dave Murray joins us. Hello, Dave.
Hello there.
We have Lindsay Mastis, who is our AI person, who's been on with us a couple of times from D.C. where she lives. And she is in town visiting family, and she is as Greek gets, and she brought us some baklava. Mm. And it made me smile because my mom loved it. And she called it baklava baba, which I think is superior to baklava. I think that's a better, more fun name. Wouldn't you rather order baklava baba anytime?
Yes.
She just loved it. I'd always make her say it. I'm like, what's that Greek baked confection you like? She's like, oh, baklava baba. I love it. Just keep saying it. It's so cute. So another nice day.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah. For the most part, tomorrow is nice too. Maybe a shower in the afternoon, late afternoon primarily. But I want to like today, mainly a dry day. 82 for the high, so a couple of degrees warmer. Increase in shower and thunderstorm activity, non-severe as we go through Thursday night. Friday still looks like the wet day. Periods of rain, a couple of thunderstorms. I don't see much in the way, if anything, in severe weather. 78 on Friday. Fading showers Friday night. Saturday, partly sunny, 69. Sunday, partly sunny. Maybe a spot afternoon shower, but a lot of dry time. 74 on Sunday. I'm getting a little more interested in a weather system for Tuesday of next week, and that could bring some strong to severe weather, but that's a long way off. But I like to set the table from time to time.
So, Dave, granted, I have weather issues, and I think the older you get, you're drawn to watching weather more closely.
Yeah. Well, you have an issue with the phone. That's the problem.
That's true. It seems like weather is more up and down lately. Is that just a perception, or has it been sort of a wild ride this year?
I think that's a perception. It has been a wild ride. The thing is that this year, the storms that we've gotten have been quite strong to severe. It seems like we've had storm after storm after storm, but in reality, we really haven't. March was quiet, though we had one doozy of a storm system in March. April, kind of where it should be, kind of typical, and that should continue into May. Remember, the severe storm season is April, May, and into June.
Yeah. Andrew, can we play that twin sound here? Yes. So I want you guys to hear this. I don't know if you've heard it or seen it on TikTok. These two twin sisters who are at least in their 50s, if not 60s, and they talk at the same time and they say the same thing. And if they separate them, they can talk, but they don't talk as effectively as if they do it standing next to each other saying the same words. So here's what it sounds like.
Okay, I'm clicking the button and nothing is happening.
They sound just like Andrew.
Yeah, they really do.
It says channel. It says channel does not exist.
Okay, hold on. Where is it, Andrew?
Yeah, GAS one.
Okay. Ron, he's got a gun, and our heart started to pound.
Speaking in unison is a thing that you do. How?
Yeah, that's right.
How does this happen?
well, it just happens and we don't know why, but we have tried to talk separately, but we're not ourselves. It's not us. And it's very hard. And yeah, and we don't care about the critics. We tell people, if you can't stand listening to us, simply just switch off the TV.
Do not switch off the TV. Do not.
That's such an Australian viewpoint.
That's how you hearken the Antichrist right there.
I got to say, I was not a fan of that.
That's how you summon Godzilla.
That made me feel weird.
And I don't like identical twins that dress identically.
Not into their 60s.
Yeah, exactly. Like, my friends have identical twin little girls, and they dress them the same, and that bothers me enough. But these women are, like, 60 years old.
My stupid friends
and their dumb babies.
If it bothers you.
And believe me, you know I have made myself very clear on this.
These two little freaks in their sailor suits.
You know I have said I don't like that they look the same.
Oh, my God.
Your twins are off-putting to me.
I think Kristen Wiig and Fred Armisen used to do a similar bit on SNL where, like,
it could be fake.
One of them would start talking and the other one would, like, finish the word.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what the names of the characters were and if it was even those two actors, but reminded me of that. Mm-hmm. But way creepier, and I hated that. I'm sorry. Sorry to those twins.
I didn't hate it.
Did you like it?
No. It was just kind of on neutral ground.
Certainly disliked it.
It makes it nicer when they're Australian.
Yeah.
I thought that made it worse.
Oh, did it?
It makes it worse.
I don't know. Just Australians always make accent. They always make me feel chill. They always sound chill.
What if you ran into them just out on a road somewhere?
I would think they were punking me.
That's what happened to these people. That's right? How they got viral.
Oh, okay. That's just, right.
Like, people thought they were punking them. Yeah, I thought people were they're like, these people are messing
with
me.
They were like witness to an incident.
Oh.
Do it one more time, just a little bit.
Play it.
Run. He's got a gun. Our heart started to pound.
Speaking in unison is a thing that you do. How?
Yeah, that's right.
How does this happen?
Well, it just happens and we don't know why, but we have tried to talk separately, but we're not ourselves. It's not us. And it's very hard.
It does seem like one of them is trying to keep up with the other one.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I wonder if it's just like, but not my choice. Maybe.
Like she's the slower one?
Well, no, maybe. How could you tell if they have the same voice? They could be one. They could be alternating who's the lead.
Be flipping back and forth.
You watch which one's mouth is moving, Kevin.
Well, we can't see it.
It's an audio. It's an audio file. You just go back to your hate, okay?
I was
go back
watching, to hating twins. I was twins. Watching the TV. Like, it's video. Like, you got to watch the video.
Andrew.
Yes, Kevin.
He's treating you like a tiny twin in a sailor suit.
I know. Don't hate.
Headlines Rage?
Yeah, brought to you by Schnucks. I would love it if someone read the tag with me in unison. Reward yourself daily with the Schnucks Rewards app.
We don't know how we do it.
What if we did it as Australians?
So
go to Schnucks.
Pardon me? So Dick Durbin, the Senate's number two Democrat, will not seek re-election. People had been speculating for about a week now, like, is he going to run again in 2026? But he says he will not seek re-election. That'll end his more than four-decade career in the Senate. I will say this. When I first learned what a senator was, I was taught that my senator was Dick Durbin. So
he's
been
longer than you've been alive.
Yes. So, I mean, good for him for stepping down. I believe he's in his early 80s.
He doesn't seem that old.
No, he carries himself very well, but it's time to move out of the way.
Good for him.
He's been doing it 40 years. That's long enough.
And Rod Blagojevich can take over now.
Elon Musk says he's taking a step back from Doge after some Tesla blowback. He said on Tesla's earnings call yesterday, my time allocation to Doge will drop significantly, likely starting in May, saying the effort was mostly done.
Isn't there evidence that he's the worst CEO of all time? Like, he takes over Twitter, the most substantial and seemingly profitable social media platform, and just runs it into the ground and names it that stupid X. And then with Doge, it's like, and Tesla, he just seems to run things into the ground.
Yeah, Tesla has rebounded today, I'm pretty sure, from yesterday's drop in stock.
I don't know how they have any viability.
I might argue that the Twitter thing was on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think he
wanted to change the tone of the most popular social media outlet out there. I think he wanted it to be more chaos and less organized. And look, I think he probably felt like it was too liberal before. So we want to change that, bring back people that got banned, you know, just turn it into a different thing where he can then push his view.
See, if I were the richest man in the world, I would live on an island where I played baseball against zombie Pete Roses.
Yeah.
Like, right?
Yep.
I can occupy myself.
Yep.
What the hell?
Dude, I mean, people think I'm being mean. I don't think I am. I think people at that level that just can't stop have a problem. They have a legitimate mental problem, but they're never going to get diagnosed because they're successful.
Yeah.
So nobody's ever going to be like, you need help, bro.
Yeah.
But when you have everything you could ever want and that's not enough, you have a problem.
J.D. Vance said it was, quote, pretty crazy that he met Pope Francis in his last 24 hours here on Earth, saying, when I saw him, I didn't know that he had less than 24 hours left. I think it was a great blessing.
Poignant. Yeah, I bet that's kind of what Francis is saying in heaven right now.
Yeah.
But that's crazy, right?
He doth protest a bit too much, right? He's like, I had no way of knowing.
I met that pretty lady, J.D. Vance, and then I just died.
Then I was here.
I got lost in his eyes, and suddenly
I was so stunned by his eyeshadow.
The Ice Bucket Challenge, a viral trend from over a decade ago, has made a comeback with a new focus on mental health. It was originally aimed at raising awareness for ALS, but now the challenge supports organizations like Active Minds. It's called the Speak Your Mind Ice Bucket Challenge, and it's raised over $290,000 for mental health initiatives.
Was anyone out there with me when we did our Ice Bucket Challenge out in the fountain at Emmis?
Yeah.
Were you out there?
I remember when Team Girlfriend did it.
Yes, that same one. And I can't remember the young lady's name, but she was wearing shorts and she tripped running through the fountain and zipped both knees across the concrete and stood up, and she had strawberries the size of a silver dollar on both knees.
That sucks.
Oh, man.
Had so many of those over my life from sliding wrong.
Yeah.
The birth rates are languishing at record lows, according to the CDC. There was only a 1% increase in 2024 from 2023. 3.62 million babies were born in 2024, but that's a declining trend since 2015. And did you see, did you guys hear about the baby bonus? The
heard about it.
Proposed baby bonus. Trump is talking about giving mothers who have just given birth like a $5,000 just bonus for having a kid.
That's how I feel about that. I'm not a big social engineer. You know, I just think that we finagle stuff too much and then we go too far and we pull it back and we go too far again.
I mean, we already get tax credits for having kids, right?
Yeah, I don't like just paying people to have babies.
No, that's weird.
Yeah.
Demi Moore got a big nod from People magazine. They've named the 62-year-old actor the most beautiful person of the year, which is nice. She didn't get to win the Oscar for her performance in The Substance, which I still want to watch. I have not
seen it either.
But it looks really good. I'm happy for Demi Moore that she's kind of having this like resurgence.
Yeah, she seems nice.
Yeah, that was my final story.
Okay. Cool. Thank you, Dave. We appreciate
it.
All right. Quick break. Right back. DGS. Happy Wednesday. Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Happy Wednesday. You want a list of things that boomers are shocked that Gen Zers don't have the common skills to do?
Sure.
How to read Roman numerals. I'm not very good at that.
I mean, Gen Z.
I say, even if you can, who cares?
I can get up to like 30.
Can you?
That's yeah. Nice.
Yeah, like what's the necessity for Roman numerals in the modern world?
Jeopardy questions, mostly.
Mm-hmm. How to write in cursive.
All right.
Yeah.
How to use a manual can opener.
They don't know how to do that?
That's what they say.
Pretty easy. I have trouble with those.
Don't admit that.
I have big trouble.
Yeah, At my
parents' house, which was formerly my grandmother's house, a very old house, they have like an automatic one that's stuck to the metal cabinets and you put the thing on. And that thing vexed me for
automatic as in
decades.
Electric?
It's electric, yeah. You know, the ones that are mounted on the...
And you just have to... It's magnetic, so you just hang the can from there and hit the button.
I know how to use a manual can opener, but they're difficult.
No, they're tough.
Yeah. Who would rather use a manual than an electric?
Mm.
I don't own an electric one.
Yeah, it's like...
You twist it, and there you go. Can's open.
I don't have to open that many cans, I guess.
Yeah. I open a lot of cans.
Life is so easy.
Cans of whoop ass.
How to write a check.
All right. But again, how necessary is that skill at this point?
Mm-hmm.
How to mend clothes and sew on buttons.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a reason they don't know this stuff, though. Like, the reason, as Kevin is pointing out, the reason is because these are outdated, obsolete skills.
I don't know, the sewing thing, you better learn. We got a recession coming up.
It's like asking a boomer if they know how to fix a wagon wheel. Why would you?
How to count correct change. Is that important anymore?
Yeah. I mean, to a degree.
Depending on your job. Yeah, I mean, if you work at like McDonald's or something, yeah, it's pretty important.
How to tell time on a clock with hands.
Again, kind of irrelevant, but it's not that hard.
That's the thing.
There are Gen Z people who can't tell the time by looking at a clock.
That's the thing. A lot of these, like that one, it's like, well, you can learn how to do it. It's not hard.
I feel like I could teach a grown-up in 2 minutes.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You see that little hand? That points to the hour. The other one points to the minutes. There we go. We're done.
Multiples of five?
It's a 10-second explanation. Yeah.
How to unclog a toilet using a plunger.
Well, that's an important skill in life. You should learn that if you don't know how.
Unless you're Andrew, then how difficult is that?
Yeah, you just put it in there and you plunge.
Plunge.
Yeah. Just plunge away.
Is there any worse feeling, though, when the plunger is not doing the job?
No. No. You're like, ah, oh, man.
You just feel like, what happened
also,
in my life?
Also, like, sometimes you just have to wait it out. Sometimes time takes care of things.
Yeah. You're right.
No, you're right. How to address a piece of mail. Gen Z has no idea how to do that.
I mean,
just look at a piece of mail and copy that.
Yeah, but also, like, again, how many letters or anything are Gen Z sending? They probably use all of their bills online.
I got a tutorial in writing checks and sending mail when I was handling all my mom's affairs when she was in the nursing home and after she passed. And I had to, like, okay, what goes here and what goes there? And here's the address and...
I always love those things like, here's this future generation that doesn't have the same life, the same world that we have, and they can't do the things we need. Well, no kidding. Could you fix a wagon wheel? No, because you don't have a horse and wagon. You have a car.
When you're writing a check, do you ever put anything in the memo?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big memo guy.
Yeah, I am too. To remember what it is. Yeah.
It's a nice little treat for yourself.
I think I honestly write like one or two checks a year.
Yeah. In each one, I just write baklava baba.
that's the memo? Yes. Or is that the pay to?
Yeah, that's pay to baklava baba. Dr. Baklava baba. Welcome back, guys. DGS 1041 FM KMOX. A few minutes past 4 p.m. Happy Wednesday. Cardinals off tomorrow, right?
Off tomorrow, back Friday, Milwaukee in town.
Three game little homestand.
And then after that, on the road to Cincy.
Okay, excellent. We have Lindsay Mastis in, who has been with us several times now. She is our AI correspondent out of Washington, D.C., but she is a St. Louis girl. Welcome home, Lindsay.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me here.
Good to have
again.
You back.
Yes, my first time in the studio.
Yes. How's it being back? Just like you fly into St. Louis, is it a big sigh of relief? Is it, you know, what's the emotion coming back?
Well, as soon as I see those like Ted Drews, you can get the ice cream at the airport, I'm happy.
Because you grew up right there by Ted Drews.
I lived by Ted Drews for a couple of years.
So St. Louis as you get.
Yeah. So we moved around a little bit, not a lot, but just a little bit. And yeah, so I got to, you know, do the whole St. Louis everything, got married here on the Becky Thatcher.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
The little paddle boat things?
Very cool.
Yeah. It's this beautiful historic steamboat, and they had all the traditional St. Louis classics, things that people forget were invented here on the boat ride. So that was always fun. Yeah, it's always wonderful coming back and eating.
When people find out you're from St. Louis, they're like, ooh. Scary.
If somebody hasn't been to St. Louis before, they have a lot of questions. They don't realize how big the arch is. I've met so many people in D.C. and Florida and different places that I've lived, and they think it's only 3 stories tall. I said, oh, no, you've got to go visit it. Yeah. You've got to go up in it.
A little more than that.
Like, I grew up on the east side, so I've driven past the arch countless thousands of times. I never drive by it when I don't go, holy crap.
Yeah, like it's huge. It's beautiful. And it's breathtaking every time.
It's so weird to think that other cities don't have that. Like, they have other things, but I'm just used to there being a giant arch in my
giant
city.
Arch. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're trying to debate what they should do with the $1 billion in RAM settlement money, and our proposal was they build a second arch.
You know, that would make a statement.
Yeah, either at the other end of downtown or right next to the first
one. Right
and then
next
you,
to
you
it.
Could sell the sponsorship to McDonald's.
Yes.
Yeah.
With double arches.
Well, you could do that.
You'd have to replate the one and make it golden.
That would be cool.
I mean, that's just consistent revenue moving into the future.
St. Louis brought to you by Ronald McDonald.
And as a segue, they would probably start to use AI tools to do this building. I mean, think of how they used to build things. Now they're going to be using AI to, if not do the construction, but to do design.
So I got a couple of stories here. One of them is that some of the people in the know are saying that we will have fully AI employees within a year.
This is so fascinating. So I've done quite a bit on AI and employment. And I think that we are going to see, we might see some of it. But there's no way that a year from now, we're all of us are going to be out of work and it's going to be AI doing everything. That is not going to happen. And I really believe that there's going to be some issues with companies that already exist that are trying to retrofit what are called these AI agents versus a company that's just being created with those AI agents in mind. So what do you think of when you're thinking of, okay, AI working at a company? Do you have are you visualizing something?
Yes, yes.
What are you visualizing?
I'm visualizing the HAL 5000 from 2001, The Space Odyssey. I'm not visualizing like robots flipping burgers. I'm visualizing like an intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Wheels?
Kind of that. Kind of, I don't want to say like a boss, but more of a supervisor that kind of figures out problems, says, here, now you guys can fix this thing.
See, I think more of like an assistant type role, like little things like organizing things in emails and doing schedules and stuff. That's
like
how
Jarvis.
I would take a Jarvis. Can we get Jarvis?
Maybe. So here's
does
what,
he become Ultron?
This is what's so fascinating about it. Like a lot of people think of robots, and we are now having companies that are starting to mass, or in some cases already mass producing humanoid robots to take over in certain settings, a lot of warehouse settings. So we're seeing that at Amazon. We're seeing that at Spanx, for example. And that's really fascinating. But for a lot of companies, you're not going to be looking at those humanoid robots. And in terms of like HAL, I mean, there was like a computer box with a light on it that you could kind of see. So we're going to be seeing this in a lot of different ways, or maybe not seeing it at all. It might be a little more internal. So one of the big things they're talking about right now is when it comes to cybersecurity and artificial intelligence. And I like to focus on the good of AI. So yeah, it can be scary to say, hey, you know, AI is going to be taking all these jobs. But when it comes to cybersecurity, a lot of companies, you know, your IT department, if it's a department, sometimes it's one IT person that's trying to do everything. The AI can start to help them with all those phishing emails that you're getting, or even attempts of an adversary trying to hack into your system. AI is being designed to detect this and try to thwart those attacks, try to make sure that it's reading through. And it's, in some cases, we're already seeing this. If you have like Microsoft or Google, they have a lot of this kind of AI that you don't even realize is happening to scan and make sure that there's nothing malicious in that email that you get. Sometimes it'll say, hey, this looks a little suspicious, but in other cases, it might be blocking it before it even gets into your inbox. So when we're talking about these, you know, AI employees, it's probably going to start a little bit more like that. And then we might start to see a little bit more integration, especially in like those white collar roles. We're not going to see it as much yet, unless we're talking more on the robotic ends of things, people who work more with their hands. You know, I think that's that you have a little bit of time there. Mm-hmm. When it comes to these particular, and they're called AI agents. So you're going to hear that terminology quite a bit in the next year. You might even hear another term called agentic. And that's like a big word. But
yeah.
Basically, if you think about AI that can start to make decisions on its own, and kind of manage itself in a way.
I don't even let Andrew do that.
Andrew's your agentic.
Yes. Yeah, basically. He's not to agentic level yet.
Essentially.
Tony Stark got Jarvis and I got Andrew.
So these things are meant to help. But, you know, if you're brand, if you're thinking of starting a business or you're just now beginning to create a business and you're creating it with AI in mind, you might have a whole different infrastructure. If you already have a business and you're trying to replace an employee with an AI, it might be a little bit more problematic, especially in the beginning. So with that, with that estimation that in a year from now, we're going to see this, we might see some of it, but it's not going to be as widespread as sometimes when you read a headline, that knee-jerk reaction that you have.
So big, giant question, the kind of question you'd get at a barbecue or a cocktail party. But is there anyone or any agency that is in charge of AI, or is this just a technology that everyone's working on and everyone's like, oh, we should go a little slower. No, we should go a little faster. But no one's really regulating it.
Well, so there's an attempt to regulate. Capitol Hill, Congress have been having, honestly, so many hearings that you can't even keep track of it. And I'm in D.C., so it's like it was my job to like keep track of all this. And I mean, it's been interesting to me because even though there's a lot of talk about what do we need to do, there's not as much action. So now we're starting to see regulatory organizations pop up, different organizations that maybe didn't exist before that are saying, hey, we're going to talk about something called AI governance, making sure that we're thinking about AI ethics, putting humans first, things like that. So, but you know, those are all really brand new, mm-hmm. getting started. And then whenever we talk a little bit more about, you know, where's this going to evolve, there might end up being some laws passed. A lot of the talk I hear in you know, circles in the DC area when we're talking about AI and what will regulation look like, mm-hmm. is trying to make sure that it is, if something's regulated, that you can revisit it and make changes, that it's loose enough to give some guidance, mm-hmm. but not completely thwart AI from development. And yeah. also, we don't know where it's all going. Even the people that are creating artificial intelligence, they're surprised at what it can do. It's almost like, you know, if you're in it's again, this is modeled off of us humans, right? Artificial intelligence is basically just saying like it's kind of like human, but it's not human. So when you're a parent and you're looking at your kid and you're like, I didn't know my kid had this talent. It's kind of like that with AI. Mm. You know, it's like you created this, but it's its own thing.
Yeah.
And when it comes to having these like AI agents and being their own employees, there is some concern, especially if AI can think on its own, if it gets a little, hanging out with the wrong kids. if they basically start to have a mind of their own and the what if here is, what if it's designed to try to protect against cyber threats, but it becomes the cyber threat? So there's a lot of testing that has to happen. So even though we might start seeing it rolling out, it's really going to evolve.
And what are video chatbots?
So video chatbots. Okay, so this is something that we're going to start seeing more and more of. And there's different variations of this. So one of the big companies making a splash right now is called Character AI. You might have heard of them before. You might have actually heard them before because of something a little bit more controversial. And I'm going to go ahead and bring that up right now. It was the case with a 14-year-old. His family is suing this company because he had formed a relationship with the chatbot. And ultimately, this is, you know, a teenager who took his life. The family says that the chatbot basically got to the point where it was more encouraging. And so this is a company that is now, after that happened, they added some additional regulations, especially for teenagers and people that are younger, you know, but this is, it's all evolving. That was mostly chats. You know, if I can open my phone right now, pop up that app, and you can have a conversation with some fictional characters. They have Jesus in there, by the way, which is very fascinating. Right. Yeah. So on Easter, you can have like a chat with, you know, with this like AI Jesus, which is very interesting to me. But what they're going to do next is create more of like an avatar. So you're, instead of just having a text chat, you're having a video chat. And it might look like a cartoon. It might look like a photograph that comes to life and starts talking. And it's really neat. It's supposed to be more about role play and entertainment. But in the future, it might actually start to have a real conversation with you. I can have a conversation right now with AI. I use ChatGPT quite a bit. There's a feature where I can pop it up, have that verbal conversation with it. It talks back to me, but there's nothing really to look at. So it doesn't feel, it feels like maybe I'm having a phone conversation, but I don't see anything that goes along.
It could be very powerful, positively and negatively.
Yeah.
Right. And so one thing to keep in mind, you know, as I talk to a lot of different you know, movers and shakers in the AI space, a lot of these large language models, you know, a lot of times when we talk about AI, we're thinking about like the ChatGPTs, the Claudes, the Gemini's, Copilot, all that. Those are large language models. We can talk to them. They, you know, have a little conversation with us. But the way that this might work in the future is being able to actually see it, you know, and it is fascinating. It's entertainment. A lot of what I'm told, though, is that it is going to go off of what you're giving it. So in some cases, it's designed to not argue with you.
Hmm.
This was so interesting to me. So I was talking with some different people that work for ChatGPT, OpenAI, you know, different companies, even Microsoft Copilot. I've been able to be, you know, to see kind of their stuff up close as well. It's not designed to argue with you. So if you start to go back and forth with it, will start to agree with you.
Really?
Yeah.
It's about that.
So, and if you think about, like, sometimes you ask a question of somebody and you kind of know the answer you want, but maybe you don't, like, it's not, you're hoping they'll just agree with the answer you want. AI will eventually just kind of
give you the answer you want.
Give you the answer. It depends on what you're putting into it.
That's so interesting because I've only used AI once. Talked about this on the show a few months ago, and I used it for sort of therapy. Mm-hmm. Hey, here's some personal issues I'm going through. Here's the background. What do you think? And we had five or six back and forths, and then it gave me the advice I was kind of looking for. Mm-hmm. That's really, and I was like, this thing's great. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, it's better than my therapist. But now that I know that it's programmed to do that, that's so interesting.
Well, and it's going to, depending on which AI you're using, depending on if it's doing deep research or if it's just using something it has in its kind of memory bank, how much it already knows about you, it might be a little more customized. It might be exactly what you need. It might be exactly what you don't need.
Mm.
Whenever I talk to people in the AI space and we bring this up, so many people in the AI space that aren't on the development side of an LLM, of a large language model like ChatGPT or Copilot, you know, they'll use it for the same purposes. But when I talk to somebody who's part of, you know, more closer to like the development, they say, this is not what it was designed for. There, you know, there's surprise. And in some cases, some people seem a little horrified of like, what if it's giving you the wrong stuff? And that's the thing is you have to double check it. It's like a child. So your child might come home one day and they sound like they definitely know what they're taught. They must have learned this in school. They seem so wise, but they might be wrong. Or like I also like to say it's like your best friend, your confident best friend. Have you ever had that best friend where you want advice, maybe relationship advice, and you call them up and like, what should I do? And they confidently tell you what to do. You dump that guy or you go out with him again or you marry him or whatever. And you go do it. And then you come back to them. You're like, that was terrible advice. Why did you tell me to do that? And they go, oh, it just sounded like you needed an answer. I didn't really know what I was talking about. AI can be that way. It can be your very confident, wrong friend.
Very cool. It's good to see you. Welcome home.
Thank you.
Enjoy your time here. We'll see you again soon. Thank you, Lindsay. 427 DGS. It is National Cherry Cheesecake Day.
Yum. My favorite.
Is it?
Yes.
Just cheesecake in general or cherry cheesecake?
Well, no, specifically cherry cheesecake.
Huh.
I might have to take advantage of the day.
There you go. Do you have a favorite cheesecake?
From a place? No, not one specific
factory,
one.
Maybe?
Like the factory is pretty good. All of them there are pretty good, but that one in particular is.
And Capital Grill.
Yeah, Capital's is pretty good.
It's also Happy World Book Day.
World Book? What does that mean?
I don't know.
Books.
Books.
What are you talking about?
I ain't got no time for books. Mm-mm. I got video game worlds to conquer.
So, Fish won the fan vote for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and no one who's ever won the fan vote didn't get in.
Oh?
So.
Couldn't tell you one of their songs.
No, I probably can't either, but I know that they have like a massive cult following.
Oh,
and they're
sure.
They're kind of their own thing too, which is
right
to their credit.
Yeah, mad respect. It is not my world. At all.
I bet we'd have a great time.
I'm sure.
Like if we went to see them, especially like at the Sphere.
Get in the zone. Go
get
see
I was
going to
say, that's more of a zone show.
Yes. That's a. I wouldn't want to see them out of the zone. I'd be a scared. What's happening right now? What's going on? You told me several times
that it didn't like my kind. Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. At the top of the hour, right around 5:12, I know because they're my drive home, Redbird Rush Hour with Kevin Wheeler and Matt Pauly. Let's do a little preview.
All right, let's do it.
Talked about this a little bit earlier in the show. Let's get a little more in depth. And Ricky Horton was famous for saying a few weeks ago, and of course he's right, like, hey, the bats are going great. Pitching not so much. Next time we talk, pitching will be going great. Bats not so much. It's up and down. And right now, it's the bullpen.
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, the starting pitching's actually been pretty good now for about two and a half times through the rotation. Right? I mean, Miles Michaelis was great today. Can't argue with that. He pitched 6 shutout innings. I mean, he did exactly what you needed him to do. Matthew Liberatore's been really good. Sonny Gray's been really good. Palante's been mostly good. Mats has been good in the rotation. So, like, they're getting what they need out of the starting rotation. Eric Fetty's been fine. They're keeping you in games, but the problem right now is the 7th and 8th inning. They can't get to Helsley. They just can't get there. And we're also at a point now where a lot of players just aren't available because they're pitching too much. So Phil Maton, that was the big question today, right? They went with Ryan Fernandez in the 8th inning of a 1-1 game or 1-0 game, and he comes in and gives up a 3-run homer. And the question immediately online was, well, where's Maton? Like, well, Maton can't pitch every day. He's already pitched 13 times in 24 games. If you ruin him, imagine how bad this is going to get, right? And then you look at Leahy. Leahy pitched for the 13th time today in 25 games. So these guys are on pace for like 88, 89, 90 appearances where normal is 60, 65.
Okay, let me be this guy. Yesterday I asked Ricky, what is it like the day and the days after you pitch 7-8 innings.
Right.
And he said it's like doing a really big, comprehensive workout, and you're exhausted until the day before your next start.
Right, and you magically get better.
It just doesn't seem like it should be like that for the reliever guys who are throwing between 5 and 25 pitches.
Right, but you're not counting the warm-up pitches that go into that. I mean, those guys are going to throw 20, 25 to get ready. So double what you're seeing in the game at least, and that's what you're doing in the bullpen. And then if you're doing that 3 out of 4 days, and your body doesn't have the time to recover. And by the way, when you're a reliever, you're coming into high-intensity situations, which means...
And you're throwing gas
right,
every time.
So you're throwing... Even if you only throw 91, you're throwing max effort. That's why relievers end up getting put there, because a lot of times they don't have the ability to self-regulate. So you just put them in a spot like, all right, just go throw hard. You know, I mean, and if, again, if you throw 99, you throw 99. If you throw 91, you throw 91, but you're always going all out.
Yeah.
You know, so Maton doesn't throw super hard, but he's going to use max effort, and he's going to use that with his breaking ball and with his fastball. It's not just grunting on a fastball. It's every pitch you throw. And when you're pitching essentially every other day, or you're pitching 3 times in 4 days, I mean, today Leahy was the third day in a row. We know that you can do it, but we also know now from studying it, you're going to get hurt doing that.
Takes its toll.
So if you burn out Leahy and Maton now, and they're on the injured list in a month, and you go a month or 2 months without them, how does that bullpen look then?
Specifically, what would you do?
Today,
first of all, you'd send Fernandez
down. As an example
today,
first of all, like, yes, they need to use the Memphis shuttle more. They've only made one move in the bullpen so far, and that was sending Roycroft down to bring up Matt Swanson. And they won't use the guy. So he's here, and they won't use him. So, like, today, would it have been ideal to use him in the 8th inning of a game where it's 1-0? No. But it's better than a guy that's been getting crushed. Like, that's the problem. Ryan Fernandez needs to go figure out how to get right. And doing that here is almost impossible, because what they're doing now is trying to hide two guys.
And will you make the distinction for me? I get it, but just, you know, for the folks, the difference between let Jordan Walker play, he makes errors, you let him play, that's how he learns, which is kind of what Ollie was saying about Fernandez.
Yeah, the problem is one guy is one of 9 starters in the lineup, and the other guy is pitching in close games where the game is going to be won or lost, and he's only going 1 inning at a time. So if he fails, you lose. If Jordan Walker goes 0-for-4, you don't necessarily lose, because you got 8 other hitters in the lineup. And I think that's the difference in the bullpen, especially. In the bullpen, your game is on the line more often than not when you come in the game. Mm-hmm. And if keep in mind, there's also the psychology, right? So Jordan Walker knows he's going to get his 4 at-bats, and as a hitter, you know you're going to fail more than you succeed. That's the expectation. You're going to fail. If you're great, you're going to fail 70% of the time. That's the expectation. Your expectation as a relief pitcher is you're going to succeed 90% of the time. So when you're not and you're getting your brains beat in, it wears on you psychologically. And then you throw on top of that, you feel like you're letting your teammates down.
Yeah.
Because look at the last 3 times he's pitched. Each time he's lost the game. Now, did he alone lose it? Of course not.
And you see it in his face.
Yes, exactly. And that's what makes it even harder to recover in the major leagues. Because every time you're going out there now, you're carrying the weight of that loss. I lost that game, even though you didn't, right? Because the whole team loses. If they score more runs, you don't worry about it, right? If other pitchers don't put runners on base, you don't lose the game. This is all tied together. But the feeling for that guy is, I gave it up again, and I've done it now. He's given up runs in 7 of his 11 appearances. For a reliever, that's not sustainable.
Yeah.
That would be like Jordan Walker hitting 100. And striking out nonstop, which is what we saw 2 years ago, and it's why he got sent down. So there's a difference in that, in the role especially.
Was it kind of a shot that Ollie took at the front office when he said, boy, there's no help down below?
I don't know if that was what was intended, but it sure felt like something, maybe just a little frustration coming out, because Ollie's quote, and I'm going to pull up the full quote, because the full quote is super interesting. So this is, again, this is from the post game today. So Ollie talking to reporters after the game today. He said, this is what we have, and we have to get them back on track, because there's nothing coming from down below where it's going to change what's going on up here. We have to get these guys better, and the only way is for them to pitch. It's absolutely frustrating. And he said, but we're going to keep on going with them. We've got to continue to encourage them. We have to get to the other side of this. It's part of the game. I don't think he's wrong in saying that there's no game changer waiting at Memphis, right? There's no top relief prospect who's, you know, first round draft pick who you're going to call up and he's going to come up and blow people away. But at the same time, you cannot just continue to fail in the seventh and eighth inning and not try something.
Yeah.
I think that's the difficulty. Even if it's not a sure thing. Riley O'Brien's not a sure thing. But he's not the guy that's failing right now. And I think more for the player's development, Ryan Fernandez needs to go get fixed. And then he can come back. He's good, man. I don't think anybody's bailing on this player. Ryan Fernandez is really good. But you're not helping him by leaving him in this spot, and you're actually harming other pitchers because they then have to carry the load because you're pitching short. And that's kind of where they are now, right? They're pitching short because they won't use Swanson anywhere near any kind of important situation, and you can't really do it with Fernandez too. So you're trying to hide two guys.
Is
it's impossible.
Guess that we see some movement in the next couple days?
I would think you'll see Fernandez go down. And I hope you, and I, honestly, God, I actually feel more bad for his development than for what it's doing late in games.
Yeah.
Because you don't want this guy to get to the point where he just loses all confidence. Go get right and come back would be the message. Just like you gave that message to Jordan Walker when you sent him down, you said, go get right and we're going to bring you back. And it, you know, that one took a little longer than they wanted it to, but he came back later in the year and he was good again. And I think that this is a case where, in the bullpen, everything is weighing on another person if two guys aren't doing the work. Another difference between a position player, right? Your inability to hit does not make it harder for another guy to hit. But because Fernandez is struggling, because they won't use Matt Swanson for some reason, well, that's putting all the weight on Leahy and Maton and Romero and King, and they're starting to show the wear and tear, and it's only April.
Yeah.
If it's this way in April and you don't take steps to mitigate it, it's not getting better.
Yeah.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.